It's Annabel Dwyer from LCNP to just give her thoughts to the topic domestic potentials we have as lawyers, etc. Please, Annabel, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here in the company of people who have worked so hard on all these issues for all this time. I have not happy news from the United States, but I'm delighted to hear that there's progress in Germany, even though the British seem to have the same problems we do. I want to start by saying a couple things. First of all, Fawn pointed out that it's quite clear that the International Court of Justice stated what the law is. The Hedge statement in the famous quote that you have referred to me, is more a question of the court not reviewing each weapon individually. It's clear that the Trident, that the Minuteman III, which I will talk about, and that the B-61 you have referred to cannot be used legally and therefore cannot be threatened to be used legally as well. So that any threat or use of the weapon that Angie was working on is illegal and criminal, quite clearly. And it didn't take the ICJ opinion to make that obvious. Many people over many years have worked on trying to establish the illegality of the threat or use of nuclear weapons. I think that in this context, it's very important for me, at least, to be very happy that Angie is here and to thank her for her work, because it is this tradition that has allowed us, forced us, to really come to grips with making the civil society push for the necessary nuclear disarmament, so that when the World Court Project came into being, it was a formation of the culture of peace. That's what Alan and Katie and Rob and all of you who worked, Peter and Cora's done all her life, have been working on creating the culture of peace. That's what we've been doing. So that when the activists come to the table, they are simply saying, look, we found a weapon of mass destruction here. It's illegal and it's criminal. And we have a duty, not only a right and a privilege, but a duty to participate in good faith disarmament processes. Now, this is a step that I think we need to be really thinking about clearly. If nuclear disarmament is, in fact, an obligation, which I think all of us would agree, and certainly the court said it was, that is, nuclear disarmament is the remedy for the crime of the illegal threat or use, the crime of the threat or use of nuclear weapons. That's the remedy, okay? So you have an extreme force, and what you're getting at is a remedy which changes the course of the way the law operates. And this is the debate that we're having. The debate is, what is the rule of law? Is it greater use of force, or is it agreement and consensus? Now, that's the question that nuclear weapons have pushed it to. And I think Fawn actually, right after the ICJ opinion was delivered, we had a discussion about this, and we agreed that, in fact, the real decision of the ICJ opinion was that law is not that which can be enforced by force or greater force. Law is agreement. Okay? So that nuclear weapons have, in fact, pushed this question to a dividing point, and the remedy is nuclear disarmament. So the question is, how does nuclear disarmament happen? What is good faith negotiations? How are they going to work? I'm arguing that in fact, the resistors in the United States have not only understood that certain weapons or tactics are illegal and criminal, but they have exercised their duty to participate in ways to solve the problem. So how this plays out and what exactly we get in the way of court decisions and the way of arguments is very interesting in U.S. courts, and I have a couple examples of what we're up against. We have the familiar kinds of decisions of the court that there is no duty or privilege to avoid complicity with or point out the government's ongoing threats or commissions of Nuremberg crimes, the harm and danger is not imminent, that nonviolent nuclear disarmament is, in fact, not even possible. So in this latest case, the only case that I'll really go into in detail, this case of the three Dominican sisters who went into a Minuteman III silo site in September of 2002 in Colorado and said, here's a weapon of mass destruction. Remember, this is post the national security statement in which the Nuclear Posture Review, in which we made very clear that we were ready to use nuclear weapons. Remember, it's at the time when the U.S. was saying there is a weapon of mass destruction in Iraq. We must go in and invade in order to solve the problem. The nuns were simply saying, invasion is not the solution. Here is transparency and inspection and disarmament nonviolently are the solutions. So if you identify a particular weapon, and the court comes back and says something like this. Now, I'll get into some of the criminal defense details a little bit, not a whole lot, because I want to make some recommendations as well. But the court said, in the case at hand, the defendants had myriad lawful avenues to further nuclear disarmament. The fact that the defendants were unlikely to effect the changes they desire through legal alternatives does not mean, ipso facto, that those alternatives do not exist. Now, if anybody, I'm aware of the fact that we're forcing all of you to speak English when we shouldn't be doing this. It's a manifestation of the same colonial patterns. But you realize the nonsense of this kind of statement. Nuclear, first of all, the judge has to be clearly assuming that nuclear disarmament is not possible. Not only that it's not possible nonviolently, but it's not possible, period. And so once you have that assumption, along with the denial of the realities of the weapons, along with no sense of law covering the threat or use of nuclear weapons, no sense that there is a rule that prohibits or a set of rules and principles that prohibit the threat or use of this particular weapon at issue, once you get that, you get this peculiar thing of federal courts in the United States refusing to recognize not only the existence of course, but the primacy of the rules and principles of humanitarian law, even if they're codified in the U.S. criminal code and in treaties, which they are in the United States. There's a war crime statute, a genocide statute. Even when applying the statutes, the criminal statutes that are applied against resistors, like trespass statute or, in this case, really serious ones like genocide or felony malicious destruction of property, even when they're applying the criminal statutes against resistors that are applied because of their direct reference to the weapon of mass destruction, which are prohibited by law of the United States and incorporated, that is directly incorporated in the criminal code. So again, you have this ridiculous circuitous kind of business going on. So let me just say really quickly that the real struggle here is not between good terrorists, us good terrorists, and bad terrorists, evil other terrorists. The real struggle is between those who view security as that which can be imposed by greater force or violence, and those who view security, as Jackie referred to, as human security yesterday. I always like to quote Allen on this case. He puts it, the security definition that we're talking about is care for each other and our common environment. And that this is implemented through common agreements. It is, in fact, the root of society, the root of civil behavior in general, and, in fact, is nonviolence. So peace is, in fact, practical and normal. That is, comports to formal norms. Okay, so I have a few more minutes. I'm going to say that one of the things that's really kind of interesting to me about the Blix Commission, since finding that we should accept the principle that nuclear weapons should be outlawed, rather than saying, as opposed to the fact that they are already outlawed, and here we can dispute about the general statement, but I think they're certainly clear that certain of the, that, for example, the Minuteman III or the Trident are clearly illegal weapons. When the Blix Commission says that, do they? I have a question. Is it because they realize, and as I think we also realize, with the nuclear resistors, that transparency and verification and irreversibility will work as principles of a nuclear weapons convention and the implementation thereof only if they're already in place, based on the principle and the rule that nuclear weapons are already illegal and criminal. Now, let me put it this way. That is, when we're going after a nuclear weapons convention, we are, in fact, setting out the procedures for eliminating nuclear weapons. It's a stage-by-stage, the Model Nuclear Weapons Convention proceeds from the assumption that nuclear weapons are illegal and that the remedy is the elimination of them, and it shows us how to do it. So the question is, how do you create the political will? What is it that's going to happen? And what I'm saying is that these cases are, in fact, need to be built up, need to be increased because they are, in fact, the nonviolent ways of nonviolent implementation. This is maybe a radical view, but I want to quickly go through this one case in 2 minutes and make a few recommendations for us. In the case of that I mentioned briefly earlier, of three elderly Dominican sisters, Ardith Platy, Carol Gilbert, and Jackie Hudson, who are currently under very draconian probation conditions amounting to house arrest in Jonah House and Ground Zero, which I can get into. These women are highly educated on the ICJ opinion, on the laws of war. They know the grotesque illegality and criminality of the Minuteman III, which they addressed, and Jackie talked a little bit about yesterday as well. And they have committed their lives to nonviolent nuclear disarmament. On October 6, 2002, they carried out a citizen inspection of a Minuteman III missile in northern Colorado. I want to show you, I'll put on my activist hat right away. This is part of a map of where the 10,000 nuclear weapons are in the United States. If we're bomb site, it's a little corner of Colorado. In this corner of Colorado, there are 49 Minuteman III missiles. Each dot represents a missile silo with a nuclear bomb 20 times more deadly than the one dropped on Hiroshima. These missiles and bombs poison the environment during their manufacture. They are on hair trigger alert and have almost been accidentally launched, and if used, would kill civilians and poison the earth, air, and water with radiation fallout. Now, this was a shirt in which we all joined the nuns in the middle of the trial going out to the silo sites. We did not go into the silo sites as the nuns had, as the sisters had. But what they did was cut two links and two chains. They walked into the silo. They put a little blood on their and crosses on the 110-ton silo cover. They lowered 20 feet of fence, and they said on the front of their hazardous material suits, which they wore, they said, "Citizen Weapon Inspection Team, quit." C-W-I-T, quit. That's good. And the other side, they said, "Disarmament Specialists." So they have a good, sort of sense of humor and theater about this, knowing perfectly well that they were going to be in trouble. However, we didn't know that the serious trouble that they were going to be in because of the terrorist threat and so on. Most of these women actually have been called the Teflon nuns because they're so articulate and so knowledgeable about both the effects of the weapons and the law. That usually when they get into a situation when they are activists like this, they in fact don't get charged or the charges are dropped because the courts don't want to deal with them and the lawyers don't want to deal with them. But the situation was different in October 2002 because of 9/11 and because of the Bush administration, which may be in many ways the same, but in fact there are many differences. One of the most dangerously delusional findings of the trial court. And, well, let me just backtrack and say that as a matter of procedure, I was asked to coordinate the defense team. We had very good trial attorneys, people who had done some of these cases before. We filed a motion to dismiss, which I think is backed by an excellent brief, which may or may not have criticism from all the assembled very, very experienced people here, and I actually will give a copy to Judge Weramantri to see what he thinks. We had Professors Ved Nanda and Francis Boyle at a motion dismiss hearing, and the trial judge wrote a very, very embarrassing order disallowing absolutely everything. But also misunderstanding the law based on real denial of the facts, which, of course, we had presented as well. So So it's delusional to say that a 335-kiloton Minuteman missile on high alert is not an ongoing real threat to commit war crimes and genocide. It's just delusional. I mean, it's quite clear that it is. So we appealed the sabotage. The nuns were convicted of sabotage and felony destruction of property. We appealed the sabotage conviction based on the unconstitutionally vague and overbroad definition of national defense. That is, national defense is anything or nothing. There are no limits to congressional or presidential war powers in the Constitution, according to the courts of the United States. There is no need to read the criminal statutes of, say, sabotage and or destruction of property in relation to or as subservient to the war crime statute and treaties, never mind humanitarian law, even if you know, there's no relation of law problem here because there's no use Kogan's offense being committed or threatened to be committed. All this is simply wrong, but we also there was lack of evidence of establishing the requisite specific intent to commit the crime of sabotage, and we said the on appeal that the sisters were entitled to a good faith jury instruction, but we lost in the Tenth Circuit also. Let me just finish. Because the Tenth Circuit on appeal said that the Minuteman III was held to be a legitimate military mission, and basically that they even found that the nuns were guilty because no man or group is above the law, without saying, of course, apparently, except the U.S. Thus, a 20-year felony became a permissible. I can go into lots of details about this. We did make flyers. I'd like actually to pass these around right now, if somebody could come grab them. The one thing that we did do as lawyers was the lawyers' committee. Is make a quick and dirty summary of the law. That's all I have, however, to give the latest resistors. There's another group that also went into a Minuteman III missile silo site just last week. They probably won't ask for any formal defense. They won't ask for any lawyers because we lawyers have not been successful. Therefore, I want to list just a few recommendations for this conference. I know I'm taking too much time, but we are, in fact, the belly of the beast, and therefore correcting the way U.S. courts do it may be important. I think it's very important for us lawyers, both nationally and internationally, to build a readily available document center and teams of lawyers who can both testify and have model briefs in these cases. We should be able to organize formal flyers that are specific to particular weapons as well as summaries of the law. We should also, I think, have lawyers consciously design and participate in actions with other activists. And it's not going to help for somebody like me, but it certainly would help if Peter Weiss and a few of you more distinguished people not necessarily got arrested, but we need to coordinate our work so that we're operating at a very high level of publicity and of consciousness building on the part of not only activists but also judges. So therefore, We need to do all kinds of details, which I will present at the IALANA meeting and talk specifically about. And we need to be forced by activists to build an ever-expanding nuclear disarmament coalition. I'd like to end just by saying that Phil Berrigan, who died recently, one of the many people we've lost in this struggle that I want to pay homage to, we've lost Sam Day and Elmer Moss and William Sloan Coffin, Jr., and a whole range of other people in these struggles. Peter is mentioned as one of the distinguished lawyers in Phil Berrigan's introduction to Francis Boyle's Criminality of Nuclear Deterrence, which the nuns used as part of their evidence. What Phil Berrigan said is, how will Americans respond when they understand that their government is nakedly lawless before its own law? And that's our question.